Mary Armantrout is a choreographer, dancer, and installation artist based in the Bay Area. She is currently an artist in residence at RPI's Experimental Media and Performing Arts Center, MPEC. WOOC correspondent Jonah Moberg talked with her about her work in progress, Listening Creates an Opening.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for being here.
Delighted.
So I think we're going to talk about the upcoming performance installation that you're presenting at MPAC and all around the city. What's it called?
It is called Listening Creates an Opening. I often call these things that I make performance installations. And so really what it is it's a live performance dance theater sort of piece, except it's also site-specific and it wanders through many different sites or spaces. And I do that in a way where we're really kind of, noodling, warming into different spaces. And so that's why I call it installation, so people understand that it's not like we're just sitting in chairs watching things on stages, like in different places. Like in this one, the audience gets to lie down in different places. They get to wander. We're going to end up sitting by the Hudson River in the dark at the end. So there's kind of like stuff to do for the audience. So I don't know if that's partly why I call it that.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people in Troy are probably familiar, maybe without knowing it, with what you're doing because of the poster that a lot of people have seen. and I think that poster has a lot of elements that are important for the piece.
Right.
And so it's you in the black gown. I think there's one where you're in a motorcycle helmet,
oh, yeah.
And there's one where you're sort of like poised and listening, and one where you're like kicking up, and the hill
yeah.
is there. Could
yeah.
you talk about the different elements of that as a way of maybe describing what you're doing?
Yeah, so I think that there's a couple things that you're drawing out in some of these poster images, which, I mean, we're trying to like give a taste of what's going on. So yeah, there's this figure in a black dress. It's a long black dress, who's pretty important in this piece. And she, he, they often wear motorcycle helmets, and they're actually are a lot of people who end up wearing this particular black dress. And so what's going on, and what are they doing? Well, actually what they're doing is they're listening. maybe you don't necessarily walk around in a long black dress that looks kind of like fancy and wear a motorcycle helmet when you need to listen. But I think that, it's a fanciful way of kind of pointing at the fact of, what is this activity of listening and how do we do it and how do we take it seriously? And I'm like, you guys, it's pretty dangerous. It's pretty dangerous to listen, or at least I find it dangerous to listen like to myself or actually to you or shit, like to like the world around us. So sometimes I need to wear a motorcycle helmet, just saying, right? Mm-hmm. So that's partly actually what that's supposed to be, and it is a little jokey, but I think that it works in certain ways. And this creature, this figure in the long black dress, if she's not wearing a motorcycle helmet, she looks, very elegant and like maybe from a past time. And for me, that also just starts immediately to kick up, where is this figure from? They don't seem like a normal everyday kind of version of a person. They seem from somewhere else. And so is that the past listening to us, or is that us, putting ourselves to the side of right now and listening from a different vantage point? So
the thing that strikes me about what you're doing is, like you said, the seriousness of it, mm-hmm. taking it very seriously, and this sort of somber and mm-hmm. contemplative mm-hmm. and like almost funereal like mm-hmm. outfit and posture. But then how goofy it is at the same time. And I wonder how you reconcile those two qualities.
Yeah, well, I think this might not be a bad point to kind of bring in that, I'm a movement artist, and I've been a movement artist since I was very small. So I used to think of myself as a dancer, except everybody kept saying, Mary, I don't understand how your work is dance. So that got to be complicated. And I'm like, well, maybe it's not dance. I don't know. I'm just doing what I'm doing. But there's an element that I'm very interested in, that is, how we manage this thing called, nowadays we're calling it in a fancy way, embodiment, which just means that we all have bodies and we walk around in them all day long, and they're kind of annoying and they're kind of cool. And that's the way human life happens. And I actually do something called Feldenkrais, which is a somatic practice, or it's a way of working with embodiment, and it's a healing thing and it's a movement thing. And I really feel like that kind of, what it is really, you could say, is an embodied form of listening. There's embodiment and there's the listening already, right? And again, listening to what? Listening to ourselves, listening to all the layers around us, other people, other things, etc., is really part of this process. And so a lot of the work that I do is really about this funny layer that humans can do of listening in this very, very complex and layered way that's not simply with our ears, that's really the embodied aspect of our being. We do listen with our ears, we listen with our eyes, we listen with our bodies. And again, another version of what this piece is really this kind of embodiment tech mashup, or looking at how those things seem to be in conflict often in our world. And yet, of course, that seems like that can't really stay true, or like, you know, how is this conversation going for us? And is a lot of tech and technology pulling us away from being human? This is a piece that's happening through impact. So, you know, the relationship of the human to technology is a piece of what I'm very interested in. And really acknowledging how much this embodiment stuff is where we still live. You know, I could drive a virtual car, but I still live in my body. And so again, how, as we start to understand what it means to stay embodied in the ways that we are, does that help us understand all of the rest of the world? And this metaphoric kind of listening, I think, is can be a rich way of just kind of pointing at remembering that our experience happens inside of us.
So I know that you're working with a time-lapse camera, but what other ways is technology entering into this?
So there are a couple different ways. We do have this time-lapse video element, and this is something that I've done a certain amount and something that I like playing with. But so what we get to do in this situation where we have actually a very long time, which is wonderful, is we're doing a whole year-long time-lapse through video. And what that means is we're going to shoot video for a whole year of the same place, and happens to be a place that's both inside and outside, right on the edge of the impact building. So we're going to get, surreptitiously, all of the seasons of Troy, if you want to put it that way, in 1 year, there. And time lapse is basically a way of speeding things up. So we'll get, like, speed date through a whole year, right, of Troy in that little postage stamp place. And so the thing that that does to me, as a person living in this normal real time, whatever we want to call this rate of time, is that, you know, it kind of makes me notice, oh, I don't live in that time-lapse world. So it's an interesting relationship of me to it. We also do something where we work with GoPro cameras and do a different form of time-lapse. It's very movable through the landscape. And that has a very odd, jumbly kind of decentering of the camera within space, because it's not really centered on any object, and it kind of is centered on the movement of the camera. And we shove those two things together. So those are a couple different kind of video technology playing things where we're kind of mushing up and changing the time rate and how we experience that. So that's one thing that we have done, and we do that a fair amount. The other thing that we're working with, though, that's related but different, is we're doing a year-long time lapse of the sky through sensors. And so sensors are, you know, different than video. And these are sensors that are capturing the color of the sky. And if you know anything about the MPAC building, the ceiling, the roof of it is clear, right? So we're like, well, we could put sensors up in the roof, essentially all over, and gather that data of color and speed that up, do that in a time-lapse way. And then we're going to have a sensor time-lapse of a year of the sky. So it's very similar to video, you could say, and yet it's a whole different technology. And to me, this sort of stuff is interesting because I think that one of the things we want to realize about what technology might be, you know, fork is technology, shoes are technology, right, is one way of saying it. But, you know, what do these slight differences do? And we're going to end up making this, you know, fake theatrical sky that hangs in the theater and that people lie under with the sensor technology to make the fake sky. Well, how do we feel about that when we lie under that? How is that different than the experience we have of the real sky? How is that difference than potentially different from the feeling of lying under a video sky? These are things that are interesting to me, and I'm like, it's the feeling that I want to know about.
That is interesting. So, and I want to digress for a moment, because yeah. I notice you saying we a lot. Who else are you working with?
Right. So I'm kind of the main performer person who ends up showing up in these worlds, but I've been working for a long time with Ian Winters, who is a video and photo and technology artist, and Evelyn Ficarra is a composer and sound artist. And so both of them are very interested in these ways that the technological and the real intersect. And we've been doing work together in this kind of way for many years now. So these are kind of, you know, next steps in conversations that we started. Yeah.
That's exciting.
Cool.
So yeah. I want to I want to know, in when you've been doing this listening to The Hill, could you talk about some of the things that you've heard?
Yeah. I mean, and it's such an interesting process listening anywhere. But, you know, I think it's so interesting to come into a place like MPAC where you have this really like stunningly beautiful new building that was built in, I think, 2008, right? And it's like, it looks new, right? It's round and it looks like a spaceship and it looks like not normal, right? And what's so interesting to me is, I mean, it's gorgeous and there's plenty to listen to there. And I, like, we finally figured out, it took me months to figure this out, but the architects of this thing are crazy amazing because that side of the hill that we're looking at does this crazy thing in the sunlight of the afternoon where it starts throwing the shadow of the girders and everything in the windows that then does this like weird pie thing on the hill. And I'm asking Ian and he's like, oh no, they planned that. And like, that's for real. It's like, that's not just an artifact of chance. So like people designing buildings like that, I'm like, it's crazy, right?
Yeah.
But then I'm like, a building like this has the ability to kind of say, I am the reality of this place now. And you're kind of like so taken by that, that you're kind of like, takes you a minute to be like, well, what else might have been here? Or, you know, like, what are we sitting on top of? And how does it fit into the landscape? And how does it relate to the rest of RPI? And of course, yes, this is a part of the hill that nobody could have built on for a long time, that they would just be like, oh, we can't build there. That's just dumb, right? So it took technology of now to be able to build on this hill in this scope. But turns out that, of course, there were row houses along 8th Avenue on both sides that were taken out. So there's row houses on the other side that are not there because that ruins the effect. So they totally changed and edited that whole quadrant to make this building show in the way that it does. And so when those sorts of things start to come out, then I'm like, well, I'm listening to that. You know, what was the urban planning around that caused us to need to edit or erase some of that? And then, you know, I've been on that hill now for many, many a day and night. There are deer on that hill. There's a ton of gophers and groundhogs. And, you know, like, there's a lot of nature there that one doesn't necessarily see during the day. They actually made a beautiful time lapse of constructing the building that they play over and over in the lobby. And so, like, the numbers of people who were there to build that thing, I mean, like, it's an army that's, of course, not there now. And if you know anything about American history, you know the waves of American pilgrims and settlers and immigrants that came through this area. You know about the Indians that were here. This was Mohican territory. So, again, the Dutch settlers that came and all of that interaction, that's still right here. And I think that I'm interested in knowing that and making sure that we acknowledge that. And, you know, just the way that, you know, where was this as part of the revolution, the American Revolution? Where was this as part of the Civil War? These are important things. You know, Woodstock was just down the street. You know, it's like there's a lot that's still here, not to mention Troy's history in particular, which is very, very interesting, and the industrial, the way in which RPI was part of the whole Industrial Revolution, the fact of the Erie Canal, and how wealthy Troy was at the turn of the century, and then, you know, the urban kind of shut down in the 60s and 70s, and the relationship to all that that's going on now. I mean, it's like, it's all right there. And just being able to listen to all that and to kind of foreground or to make it show up that one can listen to all that while you're there, I think is worthwhile. Because I also feel like that's part of my relationship to something like a building like MPAC, where I'm like, it's so beautiful and it's so showy and it's so big that I'm like, I need to get quiet and listen to allow myself to have a bigger experience.
Absolutely. I think that's all the time we have, but thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jonah.